Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is
Fight Disciples.
We are gathered here today
for the Fight Disciples UFC and boxing talk.
Tuesday night, 6:30, and as ever, we get stuck into the Fight Disciples. You listen to Radio City Talk. Hope you are well. And every single week, myself and Nick like to get stuck into a special guest. Last week, I wasn't here. I was sunning myself. Yes, okay, I was in Tenerife. So Nick did a little bit of a special with Derry Matthews. Great listen, mate. Listen to you on a sun lounger.
Good. It was hard to keep it down to an hour, to be honest with you. I was asking the producer if we could have done a second hour. We could have gone on all night, to be honest.
Oh, we're getting paid for that second hour. You better put the invoice in, sunshine. Yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? Don't be doing stuff for free on here. They'll take liberties, let me tell you. But we're even more excited. No disrespect to Derry, but even more excited about this week's guest. It is, of course, the man that you nicknamed yourself. We've said this on the show previously.
Oh, the baby-faced assassin, exactly.
That's it. You came up with that nickname, and he's here right now. He wears it on his shorts. It is, of course, that baby-faced assassin. I'm not going to tell him that to his face. It is Paul Butler. How are you, mate? You good?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. Looking sharp. You're looking well.
He's getting younger. Good. He's like the Benjamin Button of British
backwards.
Boxing.
He's going backwards. when we start the show, what we do, we normally do like a little bit of a microphone check just to make sure that everybody's levels are right so everybody can hear everybody in the studio. Now, I'm going to let you into a little bit of a background here, right? Because obviously me and Nick, journalists, presenters, call us what you will, we talk for a living. Nick turned up to the studios today with a pasty. That was for his breakfast. A steak slice for his breakfast. And obviously, one, I'm doing the microphone check with Paul. I ask him, what if you have for your breakfast just so I can get some level, some decibel level in there? What was the answer, Paul?
Five scrambled eggs.
That's it.
Not Rocky style, scrambled.
No, no toast with that?
No.
Just straight in?
Just training on protein and fats of a morning, and then I'll carb up after training.
Who does the eggs? Do you do them yourself? Or you,
do
you,
myself.
Oh, yeah. Are you a bit of a connoisseur? Do you put any like salt and pepper in there? You just go straight
I'll
in naked?
I put a bit of pepper on there, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Get in there. There you go. Are you listening? He's putting you to shame, son.
He is, yeah.
That's why he's going backwards in age and you're looking like you're looking.
Yeah, thanks to Greggs.
When I've boxed, I'll be having a Greggs.
You've got to get in there, mate. I'll tell you something, if Greggs are listening, if you want to send us some down, because we're giving it you tonight, aren't we? We mentioned you about six or seven times. Mate, pleasure to have you in the studio. A lot of people know that you are out April the 8th on the inaugural Big T Sports Show. I'll tell you something, that's big. We'll get to that a little bit later on, but you're out. I'm looking down the list. There's nobody next to your name. Have we got an opponent yet, brother, or what? What's going on?
No, we had one last week, but that's fell through because it's not good preparation for hopefully my next opponent, which hopefully will be Jamie McDonnell.
Wicked.
Who's a tall orthodox, but I had a small southpaw, so it's not
doing
ideal.
Us no favours there, yeah.
It's not ideal, no, so we're looking at someone else now.
Well, how tall are you, Nick? 6'2", 6'3"?
Messing, aren't you?
Get yourself in there, lad.
No, I wouldn't go 30 seconds. You're joking.
Listen, after your pasties, mate, you're fueled. Get yourself in there, lad. You know what I mean?
He's got a heavy bag in the gym. He doesn't need to punch me around as well.
How difficult is that when you are training for a fight, not knowing who you are fighting?
With less than 2 weeks to go, yeah.
It is difficult because you're not getting like the same type of sparring in. You haven't got an opponent, so you haven't got no one to work for. So we're just getting in different sparring every week, someone different. Just trying to tick every box, really.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because every time I've spoken to you, and fighters, obviously, that come in here, it's always a case of, well, I'm not looking beyond this opponent. I'm not looking beyond this opponent. We've been here, 2 minutes? And we've mentioned that man that we're after. We're after that crown. We're after regaining world championship belts, my man. And that is, of course, Jamie McDonnell. We know his size and shape. So in a way, are you kind of training for him at this moment in time?
Yeah, I have been for a while, to be honest, but as soon as obviously this opponent gets named, all eyes will be on him, and then we'll hopefully move on towards Jamie McDonnell then, which is a massive fight.
It's a huge fight.
It's been Jamie McDonnell for a while. Since, is this when you moved up, when you moved to Joe, was it a case of sitting down and going, right, okay, I'm going to move to this gym, we're going to do things differently, I'm going to move up in weight, target number one has got to be McDonnell. Has it literally been like that from day one? That's been the blueprint?
When I first went to Joe, the first opponent we got told was Marlon Tafalis from, he's from Thailand.
Well done, mate.
From Thailand. He's the WBO champion. So we were working towards him, and then he got ordered a mandatory, I think. Mm. And then we were looking at Haskins.
Your old mate?
My old mate, yeah. who holds my old title, so that'd have been pretty easy to make, but I'd rather Jamie McDonnell, he's the name out there. Even though he doesn't hold the super title, Zanet holds that, but if it was to beat Jamie McDonnell, I'd have to box Zanet then, so Jamie McDonnell's the right way to go, I think, because he's the name I believe in the division.
It's buzzing, there's a little division though, it's all kind of based around here, isn't it? Zanet obviously is based at Ricky Hatton's gym, isn't he? So it's all right in the northwest. Like it feels like it's waiting for someone to go in and just clean all them belts up and round them all up and pull them all together.
Babyface is here. He's ready to go, man. Exactly, he's ready to rock and roll. He's ready to do
ready to go.
And that's it. Listen, I'm going to touch upon something that is slightly negative before we talk about great positives. It's approximately about a year since you were sat in here with us preparing for a fight, obviously, which you ended up missing weight for.
Yeah.
It's about a year ago, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was.
And obviously since then, you've teamed up with Joe. You've moved to 118 now. Where are you at mentally, physically, emotionally? Are you feeling a lot better?
Yeah, I feel like I'm in my prime. I'm just coming into my prime, and I feel like Joe's going to get the best out of me. A few things have been said, like he won't be as good as he was under Arnie and stuff like that, but listen, I believe I'm improving under Joe. The sparring we're doing, the sparring he's getting in for me is a lot better than I've had anywhere else. And the people around me, the likes of the Smith brothers, you just watch them spar and you're picking up little things. Obviously, you've got Callum, nice and long, keeps everything dead straight, beefy's dead short range, so you're picking up little things every day in the gym. Obviously, you've got the likes of Crawley, you're training around champions, which I'm improving with.
Well, when you went there, I initially thought that's a great move because Scott Quigg was there. I know that Scott's now moved, obviously, stateside, but in and around your weight, bantamweight, super bantamweight, maybe just a touch above you, but Scott was there. I'm thinking, that's a nice little touch, that, actually going there, and obviously you guys, I would have guessed, working together. How's the dynamic changed since he's cleared off, obviously, Sunday himself on bloody LA beaches?
Funnily enough, I never sparred with Scott.
Never got
in? While I was there, yeah. No, he was, to be honest with you, he's massive.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
He's huge for the weight.
Yeah.
And he more than holds his own with Stephen Smith, Crawlers, Scott Cardles. So I think he probably would have been a bit too big for me to spar, especially more than four rounds anyway.
Mm. This is going to be, when we get an opponent, your third fight with John, right? Yeah, you've already had two, haven't you?
Yeah.
And even in that short period of time that I saw, in because it's 6 months really since you moved and had those two fights last year, you could see, mainly for me, confidence, I think it was.
Yeah.
You've always been a confident guy. You've been a former bloody world champion, for crying out loud. But there seemed to be an assurity about your work. You seemed to be, it was like it was, you weren't thinking about it when you were in there. It seemed like it just came naturally again.
It just flows. With Joe, I always have my amateur coach in the corner with me, as well as Joe, or whoever I've been with. And I remember Macca saying to me before my first one with Joe, upstairs where I was warming up, he said, "Do you feel good?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Game plan ready, feel comfortable, yeah?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "It feels like I've already boxed him 10 times over. I've watched him that much and know what he's going to do. Every time I stabbed to the body, he'd try and come back with a right hand."
Yeah.
So it was about coming back with my own right hand, and everything that we'd worked on in the gym fell into place in the fight.
Do you think that's what gives Joe the edge? Do you think that's what, where his strength is, his game planning? Because he watches, he's a real student of the game, isn't he,
ridiculous.
Joe Gallagher?
Like, he is ridiculous.
He literally must watch boxing 24/7. I bet he doesn't watch anything else except boxing.
He doesn't. You walk in the gym and there's always one of our opponents on in the gym. At the moment, it's obviously Liam Williams. It has been Linares. We had, obviously, that opponent, what I did have on in the gym. Honestly, he doesn't stop. We finish the gym, we go and do track or swim, he'll go home and he'll study boxing again.
So for your own confidence then, to be part of that stable, to know that Joe's got this incredible knowledge of your opponents, must give you so much confidence, because you're like, if Joe says stab to the body, slip and then count, come back with the counter right, he's obviously seen it.
Yeah.
And then after the strength of your first fight, as you say, you can see it working in practice.
Yeah.
Is that something you've never had with a coach before? Do you think that's why what his big strength
is? I think that's what's taking me to the next level. I feel more rounded in there as well. Like, I know it was good for the crowd when I used to sit on the ropes and slip, slip, catch, catch, and then throw loads of shots myself, but no point in me even being on the ropes. Why not just take that step back to the ropes? As soon as I feel the ropes, off you go. Don't even give them their 5-10 seconds of me being on the ropes, so it looks good to the judges.
He's probably already said this to you, but Joel randomly phoned me yesterday. Don't know, we just had a little bit of chat. It was a bit weird. Maybe he miscalled. He was looking for somebody else in his phone, I don't know. But we were having a general conversation, mainly about Crawl at the weekend. And then I moved on to obviously saying that you were with us today. And he said, you are the most talented British boxer around at this moment in time, active at this moment in time, naturally talented.
You know what? After we watched Linares on Saturday, he rang me up on the Sunday. He said, you need to start watching Linares. He goes, you're the closest we have in the gym and around that I know that can do what Linares does. Nice and relaxed. Mate, stab big, to the body, stab to the
that's
head.
That's big kudos.
Yeah.
I know, so...
How does that make you feel? I mean, I know that obviously you're a grounded lad, right? Mm. But how does that make you feel when he's saying... I mean, he's had some guys in his camp, man. Come on, he's had some champions in his camp, hasn't he? You know what I mean? And he's been around a lot of elite fighters. For him to say... And you've only been with him less than a year. For him to say, this is the most natural kid that I've ever had. For him to say that, that's Ring Magazine Trainer of the Year 2015? Yeah, that's big time.
It's a huge compliment, and I can only repay him by doing what I do and listening to him. Every time we're in the gym and sparring, there's always something new after each round. Like, you're doing that wrong, that needs to be there, or there's always something with him, so I feel like I'm always improving with him, which is good.
No, absolutely, man. Paul's going to be with us for a short period of time. Make sure you stick around. You are listening to Radio City Talk. We're obviously going to have to talk about stablemate Crawler of the weekend. We'll get to that very, very shortly. And I know he's mentioned his name, but we are going to be talking about the prospects that this young man will be a two-time world champion by the end of 2017. Fingers crossed on that. You're listening to Radio City Talk. Stick around.
You're listening to the Fight Disciples podcast.
You're listening to Radio City Talk. This is Fight Disciples Tuesday night. If you've only just joined us, Paul Butler is in the studio with us right now. If you've missed that first part, where have you been, man? It'll be available on our website later on, fightdisciples.com. Download it at your leisure and listen to him over and over again. We genuinely believe this kid will be... I apologise, mate. That's quite patronising, referring to you as a kid. You're not a kid. You're 28 years of age. You know what I mean?
He just looks like a kid.
It's just that you nicknamed him what you nicknamed him, hence calling him that. I apologise, my friend. But you mentioned, obviously, in our first part of our chat, Jamie McDonald. Mm. He is WBA champ. We've mentioned the WBA super champ, Zanet, who is with Ricky at this moment in time in your weight category. You've mentioned Haskins, IBF champ. There's a lot of potential here for some serious... I mean, I'm going to class Zanet as a domestic dust-up because he works down the road, down the embassy to Manchester. Yeah. All right, I'm going to class that as that. What an opportunity in this weight division, not only to become, I don't want to get too carried away here, mate, to be a one-time, to hold one of the belts, but there's an opportunity here to be unified champion.
Yeah, it's a massive opportunity. And this time, I can hopefully win it and defend it. Last time I got advised to...
To give it up.
How do you look at that now, mate? Because obviously, for those that don't know, Paul's story is you were IBF champion at this weight, bantamweight. You then vacated and stepped down in weight to do something that nobody's done in 200 years, in an attempt to obviously become world champion at the weight class below. You've now stepped back up to 118 pounds at bantamweight to regain those championship belts, because you've never lost them, you just vacated them. So how do you look back at that time now?
Biggest mistake in my career. I should have kept hold of the IBF title. I should have defended it.
Yeah.
Caballero's a very good kid. But we made the mistake in going back down a weight, not knowing what Tete was like.
Yeah. And Tete's quality as well. You know, absolute quality.
He's really good.
I think
who, by the way, is on this card that you're on with on the weekend?
I think I'd have had an easier night against Caballero. than I did against Tete. I think he was just an unknown quantity. So I think it's just a shame that I was the person that everyone got to know that Tete was about.
Yeah, true.
So now, with that, we speak about this all the time, don't we? Sometimes it's not losses, it's learns within the world of boxing.
Yeah.
So now you're a bit more mature, you've had that experience. What does it do for your hunger when you're stepping through the ropes?
I was hungry the day after I got beat. As soon as I got beat, I wanted to be back in the gym. I was in the gym the week after, and the first thing I done was spar, because I didn't want to get back in that ring and be thinking, oh, what's it like to get it again? Because it just plays on in your mind. And you see people get knocked out and they come back half the fighter they was. But I knew that wouldn't bother me because I'm quite mentally tough. Stuff like that doesn't bother me. And I think I had 4 stoppages after that. I've had 2 tough 10 rounds under Joe as well. There's no confidence been knocked from me, and I'm as eager as ever, and I want to go on and win a second world title.
Does it burn even brighter though? Because obviously with what you've done, because like you said, you weren't beaten. You decided through your team at that time to vacate and step down. Now you obviously, you mentioned the word regret a little bit earlier on, a mistake in my career. Does that then make that fire burn even brighter to say, listen, man, I should be the bantamweight champion. I should be the man. I'm going to go and prove to everybody that I'm the man.
Yeah, like you say, I didn't lose it in the ring. I vacated it because I was advised to, which I should never have done. Looking back at it now, you should never
give up a world title.
I think that's why Jay McDonald's holding on to the bantamweight division, because he's the world champion.
Yeah,
you don't want to give up something that's yours.
Kel Brook's a prime example at 147 as well.
I didn't think of it like that back then. I just thought, yeah, I'll go back down a weight, I'll box for a world title. Unbeknown, it was against Tete and no one knew nothing about him.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? Because let's be honest, up until that point, you were on a tour, mate. You were smashing everybody to pieces, you know what I mean? So it's probably one of those things, well, it's just, I've got one here, I'll go and get one there, I'll go and get one here, I'll go and get one there.
Take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Until there's a bump in the road, then you think to yourself, well, actually, this is a real prized possession that not everybody's going to get to.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You've got those natural talents to be able to go back and go and do the business, and now it's a case of going out and actually proving it.
Yeah, when you're unbeaten, you think you can't be beat.
Yeah.
And then when you do, I think it gives you a kick up the backside, and you just want to go on and push on. Even you want to train even harder then. Go out on them late night runs, early morning runs, and put it in a little bit more and go and get back what's yours.
Have you still got the IBF belt, or did you actually physically give it back when you...
No, you send you a version.
You've got a version.
Every belt apart from the British, if you don't win it outright, you keep it.
You get to keep.
Yeah.
So do you look at that belt now and think, I should be defending that? You know, I should never have walked away
from
that.
Don't look at it. It's in my dad's house. I don't really get a sniff of it,
Nick, obviously, your relationship with Paul's goes back years, mate. Right back to the ABAs, obviously, when you nicknamed him in the Liverpool Echo.
When he was still an amateur,
Talk to me about when he was an amateur. What did you see then? What did you spot? I'm obviously, Joe Gallagher, we mentioned earlier, spotted this guy.
Paul, he's always stood out from the crowd because not only is he technically superb, but, you know, back in the Vauxhall Motors days and everything like that, you know, that was a club with steeped in history, you know, that had a great history in the ABA championships. And Paul come through, and he just stood out straight away. You know, no one could live with him. You know, he can fight on the inside, he can box on the outside. He's got big power for a little guy as well. And straight away, you could see that he was made for the pro game. I think everyone could see that as well. You know, I think Paul himself probably could have stuck around in the amateurs, but for what? You know, amateurs is just full of politics, and it was inevitable that he would take control of his own career and push on with the pros. So when you won that world title so soon. It literally looked like the world was going to be your oyster. It was like, how many belts can he pick up now? And it took that knock against Tete to go away and to rebuild and to change things and to tune things up. But listen, this guy's only just getting started. I know he only looks 12, but you've got so much experience.
He's allowed to say that because he came up with a nickname.
You've got so much experience in the tank now, which you didn't have before. That's another thing you take into the ring now. The fact that you've got this experience, you've been there, you've been a world champion, you've got it, you know what it takes, and you know that on your day, there's no one in this weight class that can touch you anyway. So That's got to be an exciting thing from Paul's perspective. Obviously, it's certainly an exciting thing from Joe's perspective. it's just about making the matches now, you know. Hopefully McDonald, we spoke to Dave Caldwell about it, they fancy the fight, so I don't see any reason why their fight isn't going to get signed this week. And then it'll just be a case of week after next, you're going to have a mark and time opponent, someone that's going to give you a couple of rounds, hopefully someone quite tall as well, and then we fast forward into that world title fight. I want to see it. It's got to happen this summer.
Obviously, I don't want to jump too far ahead, because you want that world title fight at this weight class. But what about, obviously, genetic-wise, you've gone down. What about going up? Is that a plan? Is there a plan for maybe getting a bit few more pies in, you know what I mean? Get to Greg's Wee in for a bit of 1-2-2 action?
There's no plan of super bantamweight just yet. I'm just about starting to grow into a bantamweight now. I thought I was quite small last time I was a bantamweight.
Hence the decision probably to step go back down.
And now I think I'm just starting to grow in it. It was a struggle making super flyweight, and I was only a pound away from it. But bantamweight now, I'm boxing. This one will be at 8'8". Obviously, the next one will be at 8'6". So start growing into a proper bantamweight, and you'll see how strong I am at bantamweight compared to who I was last time against Stewie Hall.
Have you now added like a whole weight program as well? Are you really doing? You're doing a lot of strength and conditioning.
I've always done my strength and conditioning here in Liverpool at No Limits, and
Danny
just
and
altered.
The guys,
Danny and Sam, we just altered a few things, not to put too much muscle on, but to be strong mainly. Obviously, we wanted to put that extra pound or two on a muscle, but we don't want to go too big where we're struggling like mad to make the bantamweight division again like it was at super flyweight.
I think a lot of fight fans, they see fight night, don't they? You do the ring walk, oh great, and then you get in the ring and you do your thing. They don't necessarily see all the things that come
the 10 weeks before.
8 to 12 weeks out, all the things that you go through. I mean, we've obviously been speaking to a lot of guys at nutrition companies, like the guys at Applied Nutrition, who I know that supply Joe's gym and you guys. All you guys, and just the science of talking about those supplements and how do you integrate them with your eggs in the morning, all this type of thing. There's a lot to think about, man, and you've got to be on it all the time, or your team, should I say, has got to be on it all the time in order to be able to keep you, one, happy, and two, in trim, to be able to perform under the lights on fight night.
Yeah, definitely. It's not about, with all this applied nutrition stuff, it's not about just taking it. It's about taking it at the right times. During training, straight after training.
And the right stuff for
literally
you.
Not like an hour after training. Literally, as soon as you finish training, putting the goodness back into your body. There's a nice little treat that they're doing. It's a protein mousse.
Who's this, Applied Nutrition?
Yeah, it's a chocolate mousse.
Look at his face light up. He's like, wait, look at this, I'm getting dessert. I'm allowed to eat
that's
dessert
what it's like.
In camp.
I like my chocolate and stuff, mate, and it's hard to cut out during camp.
Yeah.
And,
Hang on a minute. Before Applied Nutrition, when would you cut out the chocolate? Come on, man. Because
like,
let's be honest,
three weeks before.
Yeah, 3 weeks. You're not doing the full 12.
No. But yeah, that's just like a nice thing because it's like a protein shake, but it's not. It's a mousse. So
it tastes like a dessert. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like having an angel.
There's people clambering now online going, "What's this mousse? That's Paul's on. It's Applied Nutrition mousse.
We need some. Let's get some in the studio."
But again, there is. Do you take, obviously, all fighters take responsibility for what they're putting into their bodies and how they're going about their business. But it is a team game at the end of the day. You want to just concentrate on doing your thing in the ring.
Yeah.
It's about having the right guys. You've just mentioned your strength and conditioning guys, your nutrition guys, your supplement guys, all these things. There's a big picture to just what we see on fight night.
Yeah. Well, we finish training. We have our shakes. We go over to a place called the Nutribar in Bolton. The whole team goes there. We'll all have our food, then we'll go over to David Lloyd's, we'll rest for another hour, and then we'll do our track or a swim. So Joe sees us up until 4 o'clock, and then we go home, and then we do what we do then. Joe obviously trusts us,
go
home, eat the right things, sleep. Joe just wants us to, like, he gets all our food prepared for us, because Nutribar give us more food to go home with. So Joe just trusts us to obviously not
eat that.
Yeah,
not order a kebab,
not pig out.
Exactly, not go McDonald's drive through at 9 o'clock at night and stuff like that. So everything's prepared perfectly for us. Joe just wants us to come in, train, eat the right things, and just repeat, really. And
from a fighter's perspective, that's got to be a massive help.
Awesome.
That you haven't not worry about what you're having for your tea. You haven't got to go to the supermarket. You haven't got to take a packed lunch. It's done.
All done. Yeah. All we've got to do is wake up in the morning, go to training,
and get better. That's brilliant. Yeah. It's incredible. It? And, you know,
because half of that,
it's a real insight. We've had Joe in the studio, and obviously we know he's a student of the game, and maybe we waxed lyrical about him before, but to know that it's all encompassing, that, you know, not only is he bringing the technical aspects, but he's bringing everything to the table. Mm. You know, you've got your supplements company, you've got the food on the table, you've got basically a lifestyle. He's built a lifestyle for these guys to follow. Mm. As long as you follow the lifestyle and you keep learning in the gym and you're committed to the lifestyle, you can get to the very top. It's great to hear about it. It's a real camp mentality, that.
Well, that's it. You just mentioned the word mentality. I'm sure there's a lot of stresses as a fighter when you're thinking, oh, I've got to go home tonight and I've got to eat this and there's nothing in my house and I've got to get this and I've got to get this food and I've got to do this. All these other things when all you want to do is concentrate on the technical aspects of your sport.
That's it, yeah. And another thing, Joe's obviously close with Applied Nutrition. They've got us free memberships toward David Lloyd's as well, which gets us in. Which gets us in. Like, David Lloyd's is a pretty funny, like, our one in Ellesmereport, you can only go to that one if you're a member there. Right. Same with everywhere, really, unless you've been a member for 3 years.
Have you got, like, one of them, like, Nando's black cards? Is that what it is? You've got a special VIP card?
I wouldn't mind a Nando's black card.
So you've got a special card where you can just go, hey,
get into any David Lloyd? That's phenomenal. Mm.
And when you say that you go in there for rest, what is it? Is it steam? Is it sauna? What are you doing
there? No.
You just go in there and chill out.
Don't be mentioning that.
Exactly.
No, we obviously there's all settees and chairs and that in there. We all go and chill there.
Just chill for an hour and then you go and do a swim or you do a sack. Wow,
and that's it, and then we go home.
Do you know something? Yeah. I fancy being a fighter. I don't fancy doing the actual fight thing on Fight Night. I fancy all this
the lifestyle.
This is all
fed,
right. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Of course.
Some of that tackle and a bit of that mousse. That mousse will look after me.
We need some of that mousse. Big shout out to Applied Nutrition. Send us some mousse.
No, absolutely. Listen, stick around. You are listening to Radio City Talk. It's Tuesday night with us, the Fight Disciples. Paul Butler's with us. He's out on April the 8th at the arena in Manchester, and then hopefully world title action will be up next for him. However, we've got a little bit of a bone to pick with him because, as I mentioned earlier on, Joe Gallagher did ring me yesterday. We had a little bit of a chat about Paul, and he inquired about Paul's football and his stuff that he gets up to at the weekend, of which we're going to be speaking about in a minute. Make sure you stick around.
This is the Fight Disciples podcast. Subscribe now via the iTunes store.
You listen to Radio City Talk. It's Tuesday night. Me and Nick here, as ever, presenting the Fight Disciples show. And every week we try our very best to get someone who is synonymous with Merseyside boxing in the studio for a little bit of a chat. And it just so happens that a week is Saturday. Paul Butler is back in action at the arena in Manchester. And he's joining us very kindly in the show right now. However, I'm sure that if you are a fan of boxing and a fan of Paul Butler, you might be able to catch him over a weekend playing down your local park.
Obviously, Saturday and Sunday League legend. This man's a Saturday Sunday League legend.
That's it, man. You know what I mean? I mean, we've had Beefy in here on previous occasions, who is massive in the football, loves the football, plays his football at the weekend.
Yeah.
And he does get a little bit of a telling off by his trainer, who is your trainer, Joe Gallagher. Listen, you've got to cut the football out, maybe 5-6 weeks out to fight. Obviously, I don't want to grass you up, Paul, but how long is it before you give up?
It's like Roy Jones. He plays footy the morning of a fight.
Honestly, it used to be like a week before. Like
a week?
I wouldn't miss a game. Like
a week before? So you'd risk broken legs, little niggles here, there and everywhere?
My dad used to kick right off all the time. I used to have to, when I was living at home, put my footy boots under my top.
Sneak
out for a run.
Yeah, just instead of walking past the window, I'd jump over the wall in front as well. Just to get out and someone to pick me up in the car.
And then go play a proper 11-a-side match?
Yeah, there's been times where he's turned up.
Well, he gave someone
and said, dragged you off.
Gone to the manager, who's picked this side? You're me, right? He's boxing next week. Get him off.
That's brilliant.
And I've been running down the left wing or playing as a striker.
Dad's here to take him off. Dad's something.
Unbelievable.
So, gotta take him off.
I know, but you're talking about your actual career here.
I know.
Against playing in the park with the lads on a Saturday. So, what are the two teams that you play for Saturday, Sunday?
Sutton Athletic on a Saturday and Sutton Casuals on a Sunday.
And what's your position? What you
striker.
Playing?
Striker.
Every single fighter we speak to,
they're,
man,
all strikers.
Glory hunters. They want to get up. They're not bothered. So, this is what it is. Solo mentality. He's not interested in the rest of the team. Give me the ball. I want to put it in the back.
Exactly.
Of the net.
That's what
it is. He's glorious.
Too small to defend, aren't I? So either left wing or striker.
It doesn't matter. Listen, it doesn't matter about size. Every single boxer we have in is a centre forward. Yeah.
Dave Caldwell.
In fact, you know what? That said, I'm pretty sure Beefy is a midfielder. Pretty sure
Beefy plays pretty much anywhere, you know.
Well, to be honest, he's Beefy, so he does whatever he wants. Yeah, it's not like the manager's going to go, you're out of position.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, as well as, obviously, are the team doing well this season?
Yeah, we've played 21-20. World Cup final on the 14th.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Flying sunshine. Are you going to be in that cup final? Obviously, you just mentioned world title aspirations with Jamie McDonald. That's not going to put you off, is it? You're still going to play the game?
I mostly manage on a Saturday.
All right. Player-manager?
Me and another.
King Kenny. King Kenny here, and he's giving it a bit, isn't he?
So I'd rather give... We've got a few strikers, so I'd rather give them the glory. And
yeah, and as long as it's going well. Otherwise, the boots come on with half an hour to go.
Off time, get off.
I'm on.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly, man. Now, the footy team's going well. I've noticed that your social media's going even better at this moment in time, mate. Have you seen this man on Twitter? He is brutal. Absolutely brutal. If you even cross his path, he will abuse you. The other day, he observed somebody, I don't know, Snapchatting or something, and he were giving them all sorts of pelters, weren't you, Sunshine?
Yeah, they always do it. just stuff like that does me head in, you know what I mean? Just give it a rest.
Have you ever thought of maybe doing a bit of stand-up comedy? You've got a little bit of banter there, mate. Is that, maybe it's that Merseyside wit. That's what it is, isn't it?
That's what it is.
Sharp songs, man. Sharp songs. Get yourself on this stage, mate.
Right? I'm too shy to be on that stage. Yeah, I'm telling you.
You're a keyboard comic, are you?
That's it. I love it.
Speaking of your actual day job, fighting, Frank Warren's done a fantastic thing with this BT TV deal, of which you're going to be on the inaugural show in Manchester.
Can't wait.
Mate,
the promos look fantastic.
They do. They look
hats off to BT Sport, but...
Mm, they look sensational. Now, obviously, your relationship with Frank on Box Nation, a lot of, let's say, casual fans might have Paul Butler going under the radar.
Yeah.
Now, with this BT deal, you must be extremely excited, because this, throws you right in the living room of every man and his dog.
Yeah, I think with Box Nation, it was... your diehard boxing fans that only knew. Like, if you walked down the street and said, do you know Paul Butler, do you know Liam Smith this time? Well, probably still now. Until we go into BT Sports, they'd have probably said, no, never heard of him.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you walked down the street and you'd ask the general public, do you know Anthony Corella?
Mm.
Do you know Tony Bellew?
Yeah.
I watched him box on Sky.
Yeah.
I think that changes everything for us that were on Box Nation going on to BT, because I think there's more viewers for BT than there is for Sky Sports, so that changes everything for us.
Their footy, especially you being on the follow-up of footy matches, for example, they always have Saturday night footy, don't they? And then I'm guessing that the boxing's going to follow straight on after the back of that.
Well, they'll be teasing the boxing during the games.
I'm guessing they will
so
absolutely.
It'd be huge. It's a massive opportunity, and it's great, really, because boxing needs it. You know, it's not good having just one promoter control British boxing the way he kind of did. I think it's amazing for Frank, and if anyone can make this relationship work, it's Frank Warren. He's been proving it for countless years in British boxing. This is just the platform he's been waiting for. So I'm super excited for that show, because not only is it a good show full of talent, but also I think BT are going to try and do something a little bit special as well. I'm excited for it.
Well, let's talk about it, because obviously you're on it. You must be thrilled that you're on the first show. That's great. But also to be on there with the WBO lightweight champion Terry Flanagan, fantastic talent, longest unbeaten streak, I think, by a British fighter.
But again, as Paul said, Danny's suffered from the fact that he's only been on Box Nation. No one knows who Terry Flanagan is, which is heartbreaking, really, because he's been so successful. Mm. You know, but he's not that draw. But I think BT Sport for him, for Billy Joe Saunders, you know, there's guys out there that are going to massively benefit. And obviously, Paul's one of them as well. You've got to ask yourself, would the McDonald world title fight have come around if he was tied to Box Nation? Possibly not. It changes the game that BT are involved now, because it means one, Frank can offer more money, can put on these type of world title fights.
No, absolutely. So Terry's on that, and then we've got your stable mate Beefy's in there, you know what I mean? We speak on our other show, episode 87 of the podcast, which is available right now, fightdisciples.com. go and download it. We speak about his little cheeky trip to Barcelona, which I was a massive fan of. I like that. Go and get a little bit of a sharpener under the radar, keep it out the way.
How's
he looking? Is he looking sharp? Is he pumped?
He's looking good. The best I've seen him, and I seen him in the whole build up towards Canelo. Obviously he didn't have a good preparation for Canelo
with the
cut eye and that. So I seen him spar once with Kel previous to the cut eye. But he's looking really good. Best I've seen him. He's sharp, he's switched on, he's focused, he's confident, but he's not overconfident. I think he just wants to put Liam Williams in his place. I think because the odds are so close, People are saying it's a 50-50 fight. I think he wants to prove that, listen, this is no 50-50 fight.
I'm the boy.
I'll be honest, we've been saying that. We've been saying it's a 50-50 fight. We think Liam Williams has done great and he seems to get better with every title opportunity. And when it was initially announced, I thought to myself, it's going to be hard for Beefy to motivate himself. You don't fight Canelo and then come back to, you know, what is really just like a upper domestic level. Mm. Hard for him to get motivated. I'm concerned here because Liam Williams has really got the bit between his teeth and is just getting better and better and better. But I think as we've drawn closer to the fight and we've seen the BT Countdown show, and what, as Paul's saying there, another noise is coming out of Joe's camp. It's like, it's almost like Beefy feels a little bit insulted that people are saying it's 50-50, because he's like, wait a minute, I've been a world champ, I am the next level, and I'm going to prove a point now that I'm completely a different level to Liam Williams. I think from a motivational standpoint, I think it could be, you know, we're predicting it potentially be fight of the year, but it could just be an absolute whitewash if Beefy's in there and he's super motivated.
And the added incentive of the interim belt now he's on there.
Exactly.
I think everything's just fallen into place for it.
You ain't going to have to go looking for Liam Williams either, which usually means that Beefy's on, you know, tears people up. If you try and meet Beefy in the centre of the ring, you're only going to go out one way, and I think that's what Liam Williams' style is going to be.
One of the most amusing things that I have with Beefy, and you're going to obviously back this up because I know you're in the gym with him on a day-to-day basis, right? The amount of talking he does whilst he's fighting, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Have you ever been ringside when he's fighting?
Chats away, yeah.
Chats! He's brutal! He's ripping them to pieces with the chat and all sorts of stuff. I'm thinking, blimmin' heck, I'd cower just at the chat with half the stuff. Yeah.
Is that it? That all you've got?
Yeah, and he's got that weird mouthpiece which makes it look like he's missing his teeth, which makes him look even more sinister. Doesn't it? He's brutal. He has got a little bit of chat about him when he's in there. He does like to have a cut.
Does it now and again in sparring. Not too much though, because sparring, it's quite respectful. But you do hear him every now and again when we're on the floor doing sit-ups and that, you hear something muttered and you're like, Beefy again.
Beefy having a go at the sparring partners and everything.
He's all good, isn't he? He's all good. One of the other stable mates was in action at the weekend, obviously, Ant Crawler. Again, we speak about it on episode 8.
Well, two as well.
Marcus.
Three of them were on.
Well, of course,
Jose,
yeah, it was.
Jose was in there as well.
Jose Burton as well.
But Ant in particular, there's been a lot of social media backlash off the back of it, with people commenting on the difference in levels. At the end of the day, my take on it is Anthony Crawler is a world-class fighter. However, Jorge Linares, over the last two fights with Anthony Crawler, we've seen the best of him. And for me, he's gone into this upper echelon of elite fighters. He's just a joke.
You've got your world-class, and then you've got your world champions, your world-class, and then you've got your elite. He's the elite of the lightweight division.
He's serious.
Him and Mikey Garcia are on a different level.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that fight as well.
Yes,
but Ant was just unlucky that I didn't think we'd get a better Linares than last time.
Yeah.
But I think he knew what was coming with Ant, and his shot selection was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He didn't throw many right uppercuts last time. He threw him quite a lot in this fight.
He couldn't miss with them, yeah.
He was bringing the left uppercuts in as well, and that's the shot what caught him and dropped him around six, was it?
Seven.
Seven.
But you even said on our other show,
yeah,
he didn't miss a shot for 10
no,
rounds.
No, he didn't.
That's unbelievable.
He doesn't miss a punch.
No, and that allows him to be quite conservative and look like at times he's coasting through rounds. I thought in the first fight he probably coasted through rounds a little bit too easy, but in this fight he was doing very little in some rounds, but what he did do was with pinpoint accuracy and was hurting Anthony as well. And don't get me wrong, I think it was a real tough performance by Anthony Crawler. I think Anthony Crawler probably improved on it on the first fight, but only marginally, whereas Linares was like a completely different fighter. He lived up to all the expectation that's behind him, and this momentum that's behind him in the US with Golden Boy and tipping him to be one of the best pound for pound fighters on the planet. On Saturday night, he actually lived up to that expectation. He produced what they know he's got in the locker that we hoped had passed them by. And there's absolutely no shame in that, you know. And I think Anthony, similar to Beefy against Canelo, should come out of it with his head held high and go, you know what? I've beaten against one of the greatest boxers pound for pound on the planet. Bring on Terry Flanagan.
You must obviously watch that. And with Joel's conversation with you afterwards about Linares, watch this guy, because you're the closest thing that we've got to this guy in Joel's opinion. You must take great inspiration from that, because we're all going crazy about Linares' performance, of how good it was. And to be compared, to even be uttered in the same sentence as Jorge Linares, you must be thinking to yourself, wow, I've got some boots to fill, but people believe that I've got the opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's just about watching him and picking up little things, what he does, just how relaxed he was under pressure.
Yeah.
Every time Crawler took a couple of steps forward, he'd take one back and go up to the sides and whip the uppercuts in, or he'd stab to the head and stab to the body as he was coming in.
Yeah.
And that stab to the body was just stopping everything.
Yeah,
Crawler couldn't do nothing.
He looked like he was enjoying himself, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, fighters do enjoy it, but he, yeah. he...
Especially after round four, once he knew he'd got pretty much all them in the bag. Yeah,
yeah.
Every time Crawler seemed to get close then, and I thought, oh, here we go, Crawler's getting into the fight now. I think once he got dropped in round seven, I think he came back one round, 8 and 9.
He was great in eight, yeah.
But then you look at Linares in rounds 11 and 12 again, he just breezed through him again, and you think... He's probably just having a break in rounds.
Yeah,
8 and 9.
Just coasting through, yeah, yeah. I thought Anthony did win the 8th round. We talked about it on the, you know, we talk about it on our boxing show on the podcast. We break the fight down a lot more on there if anyone wants to hear that breakdown. But for me, I just thought that from the second round onwards, you could see it. You could see that Linares was absolutely on point that night, and it was going to be a long round for Anthony. And you know, he's a tough kid, and he's got that poker face that Derry was talking about on this show last week, that he doesn't give the game away. He can be hurt, but he keeps moving forward. But I just think, you know, it surprised me. That was you surprised then, Joe, tried to pull him out at the end of the 11th, Paul?
Yeah,
did that surprise you?
Well, I think it was because in round 11 there wasn't much in the round up until like the last minute.
He got caught
with three or four big shots, and Joe said, listen, we're not going to win the fight, and I think Linares might want to come and just close the show in rounds 12.
Yeah.
Which he never.
Yeah,
which he never, but if he did, I think he could have stepped it up a gear or two.
Mm. Funny, because I messaged you that, didn't I, as well? I said, maybe he wants to pull him out because, you know, he ain't going to turn the fight round in the last round, but Linares might think, I'm going to go into fifth gear here and just try and...
Yeah, luckily enough, he never, but credit to Anthony, he said no chance.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And I respect the fact that Joe backed down as well, you know, because, okay, he'd landed a couple of big shots, but unlike the seventh round with that uppercut, which was a big, big punch and did hurt Anthony, you can tell, he wasn't at any other point in the fight that hurt. He wasn't in trouble.
Mm.
You know, I think the fact that he said, no, I really want to see the round out, you know, I kind of respect that Joe backed down that, because...
Joe said he was clear. He said when he was saying no, Joe...
Yeah,
I don't
he was clear in his mind.
He was clear. His eyes were clear, everything he said. So I give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and this is in Manchester, his hometown. Yeah. You know, the last thing you want to do is get pulled out in front of your hometown fan.
Yeah,
and you've
exactly.
sold.
He's done 24 rounds
and
one of the best
tickets.
On the planet.
Exactly.
End of chat.
Exactly.
Not many can say that.
No, absolutely. Well done him. And I'm sure there's many, many big nights still left. For Anthony Crawler, which we're all dead looking forward to. Now, just before I let you clear off, Derry was in last week. One of the common traits, it seems now, with our guests on this particular show is that they're all giving it a bit on the golf course, mate. Obviously, Derry's a bit of a bandit. He'll lie to us about his handicap, but I believe that yours is pretty tasty.
Yeah, I play off 8.
Eight single figures, man. So not only are you sick in the ring, you're all right on the golf course as well, bro.
That's some good golf.
I've been off 8 since I was like 16. I just don't play enough. Farewell golf. I just play in the summer.
Yeah,
that is it.
And you can just like leave it for a year, pick the clubs up, bang, and away we go.
Yeah, that's it, really.
That's disgusting.
It really is.
I enter competitions like the Race to Dubai, stuff like that. Last season, I went Leeds. I think it was the final day. The top two go through. I missed out by 2 points. It was Stapleford, and I missed out by 2.
Wow! Oh my god!
He stuck me with an old fella. He was about 80. So every time we'd hit a ball, he'd be 100 yards behind us, so we'd have to wait for him to walk. On the 14th hole, he got his walking stick out, so it was even slower again. I got in and absolutely kicked off that they stuck me with him. 80-year-old fella with me and another young lad. We were quite quick.
Yeah,
and he was off a high handicap. We were both off low handicaps. And it just didn't make sense to me.
Set
I
up.
Think it ruined me round.
Yeah, it's
is
a
it,
setup.
Once obviously you've become multiple weight world champion and unified all these divisions, is that where we're going? Are we going to the golf course? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I'd love to, but not that good.
Not that good.
No, exactly.
Doesn't play and just turn up.
Just
and
picks
can,
his bats up
can,
and,
go, yeah,
and go plays
go
off eight.
Whack off 8. No bother. Easy, mate. Easy. Listen, there'll be people listening that are dead excited about seeing you back in action. Obviously, seeing Beefy in action as well. On April the 8th. We've got some tickets up for grabs for that. Make sure you go to our website and download all our podcasts, because there's information there of how you can get your hands on tickets for that show on April the 8th, fightdisciples.com. All the information will also be on our Twitter feed, @FightDisciples. Thanks for coming in, mate. Much appreciated. You're looking top class.
He's looking younger by the year.
No, you are. You're looking top
Benjamin class. Benjamin Button. I've got my new nickname, Benjamin Button. He's going backwards.
And hopefully, by the end of 2017, there's a few belts. Next time you're in here, there's a few belts to be traded.
Hopefully.
That's what we want.
No, absolutely. You listen to Radio City Talk. Thank you so much for your time tonight. We will be back next week, next Tuesday. Beefy will be on the show next Tuesday. Hopefully, we'll be having a little bit of a chat with Terry Flanagan. Gary Lockett as well, who is Liam Williams' coach. And hopefully, Liam Williams will trap up as well on the phone for a little bit of a chat as we preview that big show, April the 8th, which Paul is well and truly a part of. Have a wonderful evening. Take care.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.